The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. It is a really hot day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and we're having a great time out here at Roberta's and at Heritage Radio Network. Actually, we're celebrating our five-year anniversary this summer, so we're going to be throwing some parties, having a lot of really great fun, some drinks and some awesome food with all the hosts and the sponsors that we've had over the past 5 years. And speaking of, if you'd like to donate to Heritage Radio Network to help us keep bringing you all this fun information from chefs, bartenders, authors, farmers, you name it. Please check out the website and help us out. Speaking of a lot of those talents, we have one on the show today. Actually, via telephone from Portland, Oregon, we've got Jeffrey Morgenthaler on the show today. He's the bar manager at Clyde Common, which is one of the coolest bars I've been to. I love it when I get to go to Portland Cocktail Week and hang out there. And he just came out with a book this month called The Bar Book. It's a technique guide. It's kind of an overall encompassing great bar book. So welcome to the show, Jeff. You there?
I am.
Cool, man. Welcome to the show.
How are you, man?
I'm great. How you been?
Fantastic.
Awesome. Well, dude, you've been busy. You were just out here, weren't you? Like promoting the book.
I just got back yesterday.
Oh, nice.
I just left New York yesterday morning.
You left just when the weather stopped being kind of perfect. It's blazing today.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Get some of that Pacific Northwest cool. So, dude, yeah. I was trying to find a time to get you in the studio, but I was actually on the West Coast when you were out here on the East Coast, and isn't it funny how that happens? Yep, exactly. So, dude, you've been, tell us about the book.
I have a book. It's so crazy. we put together a book, you know, just like the elevator pitch is, you know, there's so many books out there about, you know, basic kind of recipes and stuff. You know, I to back up a little bit, I always tell, you know, bartenders, when I train new bartenders, I always tell them that there are three things that are equally important to make a great drink, and that's the recipe that you choose, the ingredients that you select, and the technique that you employ. And noticed a few years ago that there really aren't any books out there about bar technique. And it's kind of one of the things that's always been like one of the things that I've felt really strongly about is technique. You know, when I train bartenders, like we spend a lot of time going over how to physically do these things rather than just cramming like a million recipes into their brain. I like to give them the tools that they need to like build a really great drink.
Absolutely. I mean,
so,
I'm always shocked.
So we.
Yeah, I'm always shocked about the
and it's kind of the first one and it's super exciting.
Yeah, I've always been shocked about the lack of the in the modern cocktail and bar books, because like the old ones, you know, the specifically like the Oscar Schmidt book and the Harry Johnson book, they're very service and technique heavy, is like a manual for actually like creating the drinks, not just thousand and one cocktail recipes that don't even tell you the glass that it goes into.
Yeah, I feel like I've always felt like Harry Johnson's really was really a manual for bartenders and not really home consumers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because he really does get into technique and he really does get into service and stuff like that.
Yeah. And, you know, actually,
it was like the Trader Vic's manual. I mean, Trader Vic's manual is like how to be a bartender, you know, not how to throw a party at home.
Right. Yeah,
but I wanted to kind of appeal to everybody.
Yeah, you know, you do. I often visit your website, jeffreymorgenthaler.com, and there was one article that you had on there semi recently that I actually had to. I think it was the first time I ever commented on any one of your articles on your website, but it was the bar tools for your feet, and it was a really cool thing that like no one had really ever written about. You know, talking about, we're on our feet all day, so it's like why not put attention to that. I still wear cowboy boots, but I'm kind of an idiot.
Oh, God. Yeah, I used to wear, for years, I wore Fry motorcycle boots behind the bar. And they looked great. You know, I was super cool, but, man, they did not really do my feet and legs any favors.
Yeah, there was another, I think it was one of those like kind of BuzzFeed style articles that I saw the other day, something somebody posted on Facebook. You know, it was like the 25 tips of being a bartender, and one of them was like, you don't have insurance. Dr. Scholes is your doctor. So.
Yeah, no, I saw that same one. Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Scholes is the only doctor you have.
Yeah.
Or the closest thing to a doctor you have.
Yeah.
I saw that and I laughed, but then I thought about it for a second. I was like, that's really sad.
It was kind of like one of those cry laughs, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, totally. So, okay, let's get back to the book. So what was your process? What was your research process? And how did you bring it about, you know?
Well, you know, I had this idea for a book, and I actually got approached by an agent a few years ago, like maybe 3 years ago. And we sat down and said, you know, have you ever thought about writing a book? I think that you should write a book. And I was like, yeah, I've got this crazy idea. You know, I want to do a book that's really not. And it was kind of like the Seinfeld pitch, you know, like a TV show about nothing. You know, I was like, well, I want to do a cocktail book that's not about, doesn't have anything about alcohol in it. She, you know, I sat and talked to her and she was like, you can't do that. That's a terrible idea. You have to have a chapter on gin. You have to have a chapter on vodka. You have to have like some of your, you know, kind of homemade recipes and stuff like that. And I was like, well, that's not really the book that I want to do. And I don't care enough about writing a book to really compromise on that. So I'm just not going to write a book.
Yeah.
And we parted ways. Yeah. And then my co-author, Martha Holmberg, called me up one day and she's like, hey, I've been approached, you know, about a cocktail book. Would you be interested in writing a cocktail book? And I was like, yeah, but I have this idea that I've been told is terrible. you know, so, I'll tell you about it. And I told her about it and she's like, yeah, it's kind of a hard sell. But you know, we can try. And we tried and Chronicle picked up on it immediately. And they were like, great. So we set about to do, you know, the really tough thing was like I had this idea like, okay, I want to do a book about cocktail technique. But then you have to sit down and you have to go like, well, what are, you know, how do I break this into chapters? So we kind of like went through and went through like sort of a process of everything that we kind of do behind the bar, you know, from juicing, which I always kind of think is like the very first thing that we do. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you show up. You know, say your bar opens at 4, you show up about 1:30, you know, you break out the juicer, you start juicing. And then we went through the whole kind of process, you know, on, you know, through making syrups and making bitters and using how to use ice and how to shake and how to stir, how to use a blender the right way, and then finishes up with garnishing. So it's like kind of the evolution of working in a bar, you know.
I think that's really, really interesting because something I found kind of shocking is that, you know, we kind of live in our own little like cocktail world, like a little bubble, you know, of a community and like the bars that we go to and, the people we see and like the things that we know. I mean, one of the things I like most about being a bartender is that you'll never know it all. And that's very exciting to me. There's always more to learn. But then when you break it down to like, there's so many, like I have no idea that I would love to see the numbers on how many bartenders in the world exist, but it's one thing that drives me crazy is like the a lot of them, most of them probably don't know how to stir correctly, you know?
I go to like really crazy, like super high-end bars a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I go to low-end bars a lot, but I go to crazy high-end bars a lot. And I've seen some really crazy stuff out there, man. Like, and we're talking about, like, place, like, really well-respected, like, cocktail places, you know, where the bartender doesn't even know how to use a spoon or a strainer or something like this. I was at a bar, I'm not going to name any names, but I was at a bar in New York, and, like, the woman behind the bar didn't know how to use the julep strainer. And I was just like, wow. Like,
we'll talk later after the show. I want to know where this is.
Yeah. No, we won't.
Because maybe I can line up some sort of consulting gig or maybe, yeah, maybe yeah, we totally, do it in tandem.
Totally.
That's, you know, I'll tell you the city since you told me yours, but I was in L.A. Probably about 4 years ago, and it was a bar that was suggested to me by some people in the industry that I absolutely respect, and yeah, I won't mention any of them.
No,
and
we can guess.
Yeah, but I go to this bar, I see this drink. It's kind of like it's some sort of daiquiri variation, but it has Fernet in it, which, you know, I'm like, all right, daiquiris and Fernet. That's right up my alley, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the guy or girl, it was a dude. He basically, he was like fumbling through this drink really badly and it had like an egg white and then like a atomized, kind of icon like on top of the, you know,
stenciled
the
stenciled yeah. bitters
yeah exactly
sort of
yeah totally
yeah.
But you know, when first of all the guy couldn't wasn't using jiggers, which is a huge
sure.
thing, like I don't know, I always use jiggers, plus I just like bar tools in general, but he went to pour the Fernet in it and then he took the cap off. And have you ever seen this where someone would like stick their thumb? It's like a cooking technique, I think.
They put their thumb over it and then you're getting like thumb juice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I was just blown away that happened right in front of me. And I'm like at this very high end place. And then, and then went back with this stencil and then sprayed so much bitters into it. It was insane.
Oh, like a teaspoon of bitters on top of the drink.
It was insane, man. Yeah, so...
Yeah, so if you let it sit for, like, a minute, it just sort of, like, dissipates into the foam.
Yeah, exactly.
And just creates, like, a sort of brownish, purplish mess.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened, man. You nailed it. But it's crazy to me. Like, we still have a long way to go, and there's always more to learn, you know, and that's why, you know... Yeah. Books like, I mean, that's why you're inspired to do this book, you know? It's like anyone can put together a recipe, I think. I think that's the easiest part.
And the thing, Damon, that I think is like really interesting about it is like recipes and flavors and stuff, that's so subjective, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
Well, there's no, which is great, which is the great thing about it. Like, we don't have to agree about the proper sort of proportions for a whiskey sour because there are so many different sort of palates out there. There's so many different kind of preferences out there. Like, that's great. But I think one thing that we can agree on is that, like, you know, we should say we should strain the lemon juice before we make the whiskey sour because we don't want pulp in it. Like, the technique stuff is a lot more objective. I mean, I realize there's a lot of subjectivity to it, but I think it's a lot more objective, which kind of makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
For me, you know, because it's, I think it gets into a much more interesting conversation than daiquiri, you know, like, well, I like a little bit less simple syrup in my daiquiri because I think that recipe is too sweet. That's a really boring conversation to me, you know, you know, and I feel like that's kind of been the conversation in the cocktail world for a long time. It's just like, try this, that's too sweet. Try this, that's too sour. Like, what are we talking about? But if we can talk about, like, you know, things that are like almost sort of like rules, like, yes, you should put your cocktail glass in the freezer for 10 minutes before you pour a drink into it because a cold glass is better. That's like really objective.
Or if you don't have the cooler, you know, chill it with ice, you know? Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Let's have these conversations. I think they're much more interesting than just like, I don't like this cause it's too strong.
There are certain things that, like, as far as technique goes that I've seen some, you know, some amazing things that just kind of blew my mind. That were like the simplest things, like, oh, well, yeah, it's like, it, like Thomas Waugh, for instance, at ZZ's and Dirty French.
Yeah.
So we were talking the other day and he was like, dude, yeah, it's like when I make Sazeracs, I don't use a glass from the cooler. You know, when you're about to prep, you know, like your Sazerac, he's like, dude, I put ice in it, Scotsman ice, let it chill that way while I'm making the drink, and then I empty it out, and then I put the bitter or the absinthe in, and it was one of those things where, like, I was like, all right, cool, that's great, and he's like, dude, think about when you order an absinthe at a bar or a pastis, it always comes with water in it, so actually putting the absinthe in a wet glass rather than a dry cold glass expresses the, so it's like things like that, that like really blow my mind. And things like, in, you know, like, of course we, that makes total sense. And when you think about all these things, like you said, like straining your juice when you juice it fresh every day, you know, getting the pulp out of it. Well, the pulp is going to like oxidize and make it bitter. And like, so when you think about it that way, it's like, oh, this juice is going to stay consistently like fresh tasting throughout most of the shift. You know, it's like, all right. Yeah. Somebody should put that in a book. Let's focus on that for a while.
That was like, you know, really part of the thing with the book was I was hoping that, you know, we could turn this into a larger dialogue, that this would be a topic that started coming up more often. You know, and I feel like it's been one of those sort of like backroom dialogues that goes on between bartenders, like you and Thomas Bly, you know, having this conversation. That's a conversation that you guys had, but it's not really out there in the public. I mean, I guess it is now. It's all over the radio. But like, you know, it's the sort of thing that bartenders talk about late at night, like, hey man, you know, how did you do that? And we talk about this. So I wanted to get this like out into the public and have more people kind of contributing. So, you know, I wanted to be like kind of the first book on technique, but I don't want to be the last one on technique. I hope that this is a thing that like really takes off and people really start like getting into it and you know, coming up with better ways to do things than I've outlined in the book, because it's the only way that we're going to sort of grow this business, you know, further and further.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jeff, we're about halfway through the show. Let's take a quick break. And then when we get back, we'll continue talking with Jeffrey Morgenthaler.
Awesome.
All right.
Hi, I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means we depend on the support of members like you. The reason I support Heritage Radio Network is because I'm passionate about connecting women and food to an audience that supports them and their businesses. The best way you can support this program and others like it is to visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
This is Brooks Headley, the pastry chef at Del Posto in Manhattan, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network.
And we are back. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, and this is The Speakeasy. And on the show today, got my buddy Jeffrey Morgenthaler from Portland, Oregon. We actually were just talking about his new book that came out very recently. It's still probably hot off the press. The ink probably hasn't even dried yet. And that's awesome. So I'm very, very happy that you got this book out. And, you know, we're talking about technique before the break. And and you were talking about these, like, late night hours of, you know, the bar talk, the shop talk. And, you know, I feel like that's – I wouldn't be able to have this show, you know, if it weren't for those moments. It's basically the same thing, but we happen to have microphones in front of us. But we're talking the same way. But, you know also, I just think that this information, like what we're talking about today and what's in your book, I think we're at such a great place. Like, it keeps getting more and more exciting. I would say even like 5 years ago, I mean, so much has happened over the last decade, but like, I would say even 5 years ago, we didn't have the kind of enthusiasm that we're seeing nowadays. As far as like home bartenders and enthusiasts, you know, it's the kind of book that I know that I've been told about your book by several people who are not even in the industry, not even bartenders.
That's awesome.
You know, and they're like, "This is a cool book, man." I'm like, "Yeah, right on." And that's great. I mean, like we said before, there's so much information out there about recipes, and those are subjective to your palate as well. You know, like so it's not necessarily about following this one recipe, unless you want to get I think with like tiki drinks, you kind of have to get like down to the spec. So that's a little different. Maybe we'll swap out a rum here and there. But yeah, that's one. But you know, some people like their. I mean, clearly we know about martinis. You know, people like them drier than wet. Some people like them wetter. I like mine with blanc vermouth, and I actually like 50-50s. So. There we go. Yeah. Maybe
and
I have a sweet tooth.
I don't like 50-50s. I like a 5-to-1 dry, you know?
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's all about, you know, it's about figuring that out first. But then you get to go in and you figure out, oh, well, I actually like to stir mine 50 times with cold draft ice rather than, you know, like 20 times with like Hoshizaki ice. And those techniques, like, as far as, okay, well, let's get into that. How do you feel about like the different like what's your ice program like at and I hate the word ice program.
I know it's the worst.
But but like at Clyde Common, for instance, like do you freeze your own? Do you have a
we you know I always tell people you know that especially a lot of younger bartenders get really stressed out about their ice program, you know, about what they're going to do with their ice program, the ice program, you know, they want to be successful, but they know that they need to have like a world-class ice program. We run a 3-time James Beard nominated bar program with crappy ice. I can't even, it's a Manitowoc, I think. it makes cubes that are about 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch.
I know the one.
Got a huge.
Yeah.
They've got a big divot in them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not pillow ice. It's nothing that bad. They're basically kind of cube shaped. And we make really fantastic drinks with this ice. It's not, you know, Hoshizaki or cold draft ice. I just don't think that, like, if you're going to have an ice program, that's great. I think you can do a lot of really great things. But I also see, I see a lot of people sort of using ice, without actually understanding what it does. Like, you know, I get served constantly. I get served all these drinks on one solid cube all the time. And I don't think all drinks are really best when served on one cube, you know? Like I don't really want a gin and tonic on an ice ball.
Absolutely.
I think that there's, you know, I was talking to Dale DeGroff about this a few years ago, and he was like, there's something about the sort of tinkle of cubes in a glass that's really nice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. Like, if I'm going to have, like, a gin and tonic or a Collins or something like that, I don't want, like, a spear or a sphere or anything like that. Like, I want to have a glass full of ice because I want my drink to be cold and nice and refreshing, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like, sort of bigger is better these days. And I think there's a lot of people using ice without really totally understanding. So, that, you know, those are the things that we tried to kind of dispel in the chapter on ice is, like, you know, there's a lot of different types of ice and they all have different purposes, and it's important to know when to use what. And it's not just, not everything should just be served on a giant massive block of ice.
Well, absolutely. I mean, like at, you know? Like at Prime Meats and Frankie's, what we do is we have a Hoshizaki machine. It's great because, like, you know, cold draft, you know, is great too. Some people are using some really sophisticated, like, giant ice block freezers and cutting them down. But we just take hotel pans. We have filtered water, you know, from a Natura system. We cover them, freeze them in our freezer, and then we hand carve our chunks for, like, our old fashions and things like that. But they're never, like... They're never, like, just, like, a perfect thing. And I think that's kind of, there's, like, especially for, like, an older, timey, like, rustic place, I think it's very nice to not, you know, it's kind of, like, fitting for the place rather than having something so perfect. Because that bar isn't perfect, you know, and no bar really is. I mean, yeah. I've seen a couple lately that are pretty sweet. Like, they might be perfect. But, I mean, but it's also, you're dealing with, like, humans, you know. Humans making the drinks, humans... you know, enjoying the drinks, hopefully enjoying them. And you know what? It adds like that human element of error, you know, or just variance, really, I guess is what I would say. And that's really nice, you know? But, you know, going back to like how it's served on a big chunk of ice or like a highball with a spear in a Collins glass, you know. I agree with Dale. I mean, there's not too many times that I disagree with Dale DeGroff, yeah. You know.
There's a sort of romanticism about it. Like, we like to have a cocktail full of, you know, a glass full of ice sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
You know?
And that's not even, we haven't even talked about stirring it or shaking it, you know? It's like, there's that part, too. I like using the Hoshizaki ice because I don't have to crack it, you know? It's
ready. That's exactly. Our stir times are a lot shorter than you guys with cold draft ice because we don't have to spend a bunch of time cracking the ice. I mean, basically what you're doing, you know, is you're turning your fancy cold draft ice into our ice by doing that. I mean,
That's totally true.
We've just sort of saved a step there. You know?
Yeah. And also we don't have like super, super tiny particulates of ice that are melting instantly and watering down the drink. You know, it's like, I mean, you're creating more surface area when you crack your ice, and it's like, well, let's use more of this other ice. So.
Well, you know, this, like, back to a sort of, like, larger topic, you know, with this book, one thing that we really tried not to do was be super judgmental about different things. I realized that there are so many trends that kind of come in and come out, and so there's not really, you know, we tell you how to do these things, but we don't really tell you whether we think they're good or bad always, you know? I mean, I think a perfect example is the chapter on infusions and bitters and tinctures and stuff, you know. So many people frown on, like, say, strawberry-infused vodka these days, you know. Like, you won't find a lot of sort of fancy mixologists that think that strawberry-infused vodka is very cool. But, you know, what we show you in the book is, like, a strawberry-infused vodka is really no different than, say, you know, a house-made cardamom bitters or, you know, something like that. It's really just infusing, you know, alcohol with flavors. And so we show you how to do the infusions. We show you how to make big ice. We show you how to make crushed ice and all this kind of stuff. And I think it's up to you and up to other people to sort of be the arbiters of, you know, when to use these things and when not to. I just wanted to show people, like, how you actually do them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're giving them the information. And then, you know, so, I think the most important part here is having the information, and then you could do whatever you want with it, you know. But having the information is the key.
Honestly,
thing.
I don't care. Like, if you want to do, like, you know, watermelon infused vodka at your bar, like, I really could not care less. I just want to show you how to do it so that you do it the right way.
Yeah, that watermelon infused vodka sounded pretty good on this hot day.
Actually, sounds kind of delicious right now.
Yeah. So, okay, I mean, we're at the end of the show, Jeffrey, but I can't thank you enough for making the time. I wish we could have gotten you into the studio, but next time when you're in New York, swing by the studio, and we'll definitely chat it up again. And
that sounds awesome.
The book is called The Bar Book by Jeffrey Morgenthaler, and it's out now. It's everywhere.
Now.
And it's now. And
you can, right now.
You can also read a lot of his great writings on his website, jeffreymorgenthaler.com. And we'll have that information posted on our website on heritageradionetwork.org. And I can't wait to hear how it goes, man. This has been a hell of a pleasure having you on the show. Can't wait to see you next
time. I
really
appreciate it, man.
All right. Cheers, buddy.
Okay. Good talking to you. Bye.
That's it for the Speakeasy. We'll see you next week. Cheers. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil that rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you that is sighing and those things that suck you in. To God-fearing man, a redeemed one at that, the warning comes from deep within.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.